So Eric just made a motion to approve the minutes of January 18th. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Maria seconds it. Any amendments or changes to the three-page appendix minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
I abstain. It's Catherine.
Catherine abstaining?
Yes, because I wasn't here.
Thank you. I'll rule it that the motion carries. So the next item of business is public comment. And state agencies, they make you say public comment three times. So public comment will be the third time. Anyone? Hearing none.
Really?
Yeah, it's not written down anywhere, but they have this custom of you have to say it three times. Knock three times. Old business, none. New business. Item one, strategic planning process and timeline to update plan. Rob.
So you have in your meeting packet cover memo, and attached to the cover memo is a request for proposal and preliminary scope of services. You may recall that updating our strategic plan was an identified goal of this office. So towards that end, this office issued an RFP to engage a consultant for this purpose. It was issued April 2nd. The deadline for proposal submittals is May 1st. By way of background, our last strategic plan wasn't updated until 2013, so it's been quite some time. We're well overdue to get this done again. I think it's appropriate that we do so. For a number of reasons, I think we need to re-engage some of our community members and partners. In the past, we've done community surveys to kind of measure and get feedback on our quality and scope of services from both partners, general public, and the regulated community. So I think it's important to update that feedback and information. I think many of you understand that a strategic plan is important so we can make sure it aligns with kind of our day-to-day operations to make sure that we continue to stay on track towards achieving our goals and our mission and our vision. We also want to make sure that we're allocating resources effectively and efficiently. And strategic plan will help us do that. And it also gives us a measure and a matrix to help monitor progress for the agency as a whole. And so in terms of a timeline, on the second page of the memo, you can see a very rough timeline. This is a tentative timeline. We'll work out a final timeline once with the selected consulting firm. But the milestones activities include a half-day board retreat, a half-day staff retreat, implement the community survey, draft and update the plan, and then a full presentation to the board at their October meeting. I should also note that there was monies appropriated as part of the adopted fiscal year 2024-2025 budget for this purpose. The very first step in this process, I would suggest be simply the board taking some kind of action to establish a strategic planning committee. We can talk more in detail about that, but I think it's just appropriate for the board just to simply say, you know, we're going to create this ad hoc committee for this purpose. That the primary role of that committee would one to help help in the consultant selection and And two, to, you know, review the final work product of the consultant, I think, before it goes to the board. And then also, there may be some interim phases in there, which my office may need some support.
And you forgot the very vital board participation in selecting where the board retreat will be. I'll suggest we all go to Block Island.
Block Island. That's good to me. We'll have to appropriate more funds for that.
We can charter a plane over. Air New England flies there.
So that's an overview of, you know, the background, the rationale, and the first step that I'm suggesting.
All right. So may I follow up on Rob's request, because we're not all here tonight, to specifically send out a letter of interest to board members to serve on this planning committee. And we'll have some natural selection, and after that, we'll do arm twisting.
Okay.
But any further discussion on this outline? But with the suggestion that we ask board members specifically if they're willing to or interested in participating on this subcommittee, the steering committee for this.
Do we have time under your suggested timeline to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send it out tomorrow.
Okay.
And we'll get responses next week. And that'll be, and besides the deadline for the proposals is May 1st. So we still got a couple of weeks.
I just want to be outreaching, because it may be somebody that's not participating has a reason why they're not fully engaged.
Yeah.
And they may become engaged if we engage them.
Sure.
Any further discussion? It's a very important issue. It will be a lot of work. The last time it was a lot of work, but we came on good kind of work plan, and we are overdue here due to several things like COVID. Minor things where the health district was just a little bit busy. Any other suggestions or comments? Anything else, Rob?
No, only that maybe just make the motion that the board will establish the planning committee. And you've already identified a mechanism on how to do that.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 The opposition or abstentions? All set. Next item, subcommittee reports, finance committee. We didn't have a meeting because I couldn't get out of work in time and didn't have a quorum of that. So why don't you just run through the highlights, Rob?
Sure. So you do have in your meeting packet item two, which is the Health District financial statements for the period ending December 31st, 2023. So it's the end of the second quarter. I want to direct your attention to the column in the middle, or third column from the right, table labeled 2024. Top half of that column are the revenue accounts. All the revenue accounts are pretty much on track or ahead of projections for given that period of time. The only item I would want to bring your attention to is under vaccine administration. It's the second account from the bottom. You'll see that we haven't collected any revenue yet, and I'm anticipating that is going to be extremely low. This is in part due to the fact that the challenges we've been having in getting ourselves enrolled and credentialed with private insurance companies so that we can charge and get reimbursement for vaccine purchase and administration. We have had some recent progress on that front, however, with Mansfield support. We've been able to finally get some traction with both Anthem and Cigna. They're now communicating to me. The prior 8 months in which I've been trying to get enrolled, that I've been mostly ignored, but now we're in communication. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that our ability to get enrolled and credentialed is progressing forward at this point. So more to come on that. That being said, total revenues are $563,596, or 54.9% of the budget. Moving on down that same column for expenditures, salaries are lower than what we'd anticipate this coming year in terms of spending. Well,
if I can interrupt.
Sure.
So this is reporting through December 31.
Just halfway through the
year. So halfway through the year. So when you're looking at 54.9%, just put it in context.
Yep. So salaries were lower than what we anticipated in terms of spending because of a vacancy and also because of grant offsets, which has allowed us to backfill some regular staff positions. And then aligned with that, you can see the grant deductions are a little bit higher than we'd expect that time this time of the year. Again, because we're bringing in more grants than we had anticipated or budgeted. Under the benefit line, that expenditure is low, very low for this time of year, because we were able to backfill with $36,000 in reimbursements from Mission Control. I think that's the name of our pension, our 501. We had a number of employees who separated before they were fully invested. Right. And so they forfeited the monies that the health district had contributed to their 401s. And over the course of the past 10 years, we had a number of employees who weren't fully invested when they separated. So we got that money back from Mission Control and it was used to backfill this line.
I don't think it's Mission Control. It's
Mission Retirement.
Square.
If it was ICMA, I'd still remember it. Anyway, so
they wanted to get the city managers out of there.
Yeah. So we've got a bit of a bonus in this particular line. Moving on down, professional subcontracted services are a little bit higher than we would anticipate this time of year because we engaged two food service inspector subcontractors to make up for the vacancy we have on the regular staff side of things. So that's why that number is a little high. Other than that, all the other numbers would be as I would anticipate. The total expenditure of $399,506 or 41% of the adopted budget. And moving on down that column, that leaves us an operational surplus for that period of $137,090. With a fund balance of $738,872. I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
So the transfer to CNRE fund, is that done at the end of the year?
It is.
Okay. Any questions?
Might be good to know that we have two members that have joined us. Mark Walter.
Yep.
Hi, Mark.
Here. Hey, Mark. Or
and
Beverly.
Brian Cohen.
Hello.
Brian?
Hi.
Hey, John.
Hi, Brian.
Yeah.
Brian was on earlier.
Is
that
really Brian?
Yeah.
So looks like we got a pretty healthy balance sheet. And obviously we're ahead of the curve the first 6 months of the year. That's pretty strong. Do you think that trend will continue?
I think it's going to slow down a little bit. Some of the preliminary numbers I've been looking at on the revenue side of things for some of the service categories have
Some housing growth is just kind of
Yeah, so it doesn't look like our spring, at least the preliminary numbers I've looked at so far, I haven't seen the final quarterly report, aren't as strong as I'd like to see during a spring period when building's supposed to be booming and everything's...
But it's raining so much, we should have some good septic repairs.
That too. So it is yet to... it's a possibility it may trend down a little bit, but we'll see what the final quarterly report is. So a motion to accept.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the financial reports?
Move to accept the financial report for the period from July 1 to December 31, 2023.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
I'd second that.
And seconds it. Any discussion? Yeah, I think Eric kind of summed it up. I think we're in a pretty good shape right now.
Means we definitely have enough money to go to Block Island for the retreat, maybe even Aruba.
You helped me renovate a bathroom out there. I got to stop for a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Unless there's an opposition, hearing none, I'll rule the motion carries. So the next item is not on the agenda, but we always have it, and I'm going to ask that we put it on the agenda going forward. We always add kind of a report from a advisor. I think we had to make it a standard on ours, and I think it might be.
I usually cover it under the director's report, but we can add a special one.
Just so we get in a boilerplate, and I suggest that we put that before town reports.
Okay.
So, Dr. Derrick, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you. I have nothing special to add.
Oh, come on. You have your own.
Well, the ticks are out.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The ticks are out. But, hard to say whether it's going to be a boom year or a bad year, either way you look at it. Respiratory infections are on the decline, but still around. We're still seeing COVID cases, not so much influenza, but a lot of non-COVID, non-flu respiratory things. And allergies are starting to pick up, so people are sniffling and snorting. But I would have to say there's really nothing unusual in the community. Although, actually, I can tell you a vignette, an interesting case that I had. A kid with lead poisoning, and which is to say an elevated lead level, which sort of came out of the blue. They lived in relatively recently constructed housing, so that wasn't the issue. To make a somewhat long story a little bit shorter, we tested everyone in the family. The only two people that tested positive for lead were the child, who was an infant, a year old, and the father. And it turned out the story was that the father was doing some construction work in some location where there was lead exposure. He would come home from work at the end of his busy day, and mother, who had two other kids, at the end of her busy day, said to the father, "Here, you take the baby and hold him," while dad was still dressed in his work clothes. And to the best of our assessment, that was the exposure that the child had to lead. Father is now changing his clothes before he comes into the house. We've been monitoring the lead level in the kid, and it's slowly coming down.
So you get it from inhaling what's ever on the
just on the skin and ingesting, putting them, his hands would touch daddy and then put it in his mouth. So that was an interesting piece of detective.
Just to elaborate on that, if I may, because of the significant lowering of the blood lead level thresholds, which trigger action by the local health department, and which occurred last year. My staff has been much more engagement by my staff in these kinds of investigative work. Because when you get to the lower levels like that, there's not necessarily an obvious source of environmental exposure like chipping paint or defective paint or something else. We've come across a number of situations in which we have a few right now, which we have not been able to definitively discern the exposure path. And so it's turned into quite a bit of an investigative process and a relatively new process in that regard to my staff to get into some of these cases. And the case Dr. Dardick was referring to is.
But so, in that case, we did identify.
We did identify.
Right.
But we've got a couple in which we can't have yet to identify. We've been a couple of passes through the homes, testing, interviews.
In those cases, are the lead levels remaining high, or are they
starting to come down? It's still in progress. Yeah, we don't have enough data yet to see what's going on. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be interesting to see whether with the investigations, something sort of dissipates and the levels miraculously come down.
And Rob, is the health district going to be involved in PFAS issues besides in the water supply beyond that?
Yeah, we'll certainly be involved. Our level of involvement will depend largely on how affected our communities are by this. Because as far as I know right now, I'm not aware of any public water supplies within our jurisdiction which have PFAS detections.
But there may be I know some that the water companies are sharing with you.
Yeah, okay, that could be. But the state health department just recently, last year asked them all to test. But I haven't seen any of those results yet. I'm assuming that if we saw some exceedances, now that the EPA has issued maximum contaminant levels for PFAS, that we'll start to see that information.
You may want to see if Connecticut Water Company wants to meet with you.
I was going to say,
yeah,
we have a big one here. It's hard to
we have a lot. Well, Connecticut Water is covering lots of other community water supplies. Yeah.
I would just want to share with people on one issue that I heard on PFAS last night at the Lions Club meeting.
Yep.
The president of Lions Club is a professor at Nichols College and in the business school, and they do entrepreneurial programs for college kids, and they actually develop companies. One of their students last year developed a company to deal with PFAS issues. He is now a millionaire.
Yeah.
He set up a company that they buy old fire trucks and put washing equipment, and they go from fire station and clean all their gear in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And PFAS on fire equipment is
lots of contaminants.
A lot of stuff. A lot of firefighters get cancer. They think there's a significant relationship with that. Cleaning the gear is the most important thing that they can do. And it's really hard for them to, if they have a washer, to get all that stuff, where this truck comes in and just cleans it all. So they buy up these cheap old fire trucks that look right and put washing machines and dryers on them and comes in and do all the gear at once. That's a unique idea spreading across the country. So look for opportunities.
There's something with that water that they've used to wash everything.
They recycle it in the truck because the truck has a tank. So they can then treat it. But
treat it, okay.
So
if it's treated.
So
you can treat PFAS effectively with granulated activated charcoal.
Okay.
So it's not an expensive treatment.
Right.
But anyways, it's just interesting to some 21-year-old kid figure out how to deal with a significant health issue.
Sure.
And maybe saving a lot of people. Firemen really have a high propensity for cancer, and they're pretty clear now. It's coming off the gear. So just sharing that.
I know they're mandating that all of our active firefighters have two sets of turnout gear. And if you go in a fire or a toxic environment with your gear on, it is always washed before you wear it again now. So there's a lot more understanding of that.
Right.
But there's a lot of environmental risk too, that's for sure.
So, okay.
We're on Dr. Dardick's report.
Yeah, go ahead. You have anything else?
No,
okay. So, why don't we do town reports? Brian, are you available to give us a report on town?
Yep.
Why don't you go first?
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. In regards to health issues in Talland, our salt in the wells issue, the best way to put it, is our greatest concern, and especially financially here in the town. And I want to thank Eastern Highlands for really partnering with us and deep and trying to work through the solutions phase now for several of our homes, and then maybe looking towards some long-term planning in regards to water softeners as a whole and the problems they can create for our water systems. That's really the top health concern for us in town. Everything else, I'm satisfied with how we're doing here in town. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Ryan, you want to go?
Sure. With a public health focus, I'd welcome if Maria knows anything or thinking of anything. The only thing that's coming to mind for me right now, kind of for this group, would be that I believe in some of the final stages of getting the water treatment system that we've designed with Weston and Sampson's help for the elementary school approved. I know I've reported in past meetings that the copper piping in the new elementary school, which we believed after some period of time that's already come and gone, that the leaching from the copper, the pickling process, the patina setting up would already be done, and we wouldn't have elevated copper levels. That has not materialized. The water appears to be corrosive, will continue to be corrosive. And so we've been working with Weston Sampson, again, looking for a DPH approval to get a treatment system, whole system treatment in there, to ultimately address the corrosivity, which will alleviate the copper in the water, but also will prolong the life or extend the life of the pipings, because the obviously over time corrosivity not only puts copper in the water, but it takes copper out of the copper, right? You're gonna lose your pipes. So yeah, so I think we're moving towards some resolution on that. That project is completed. We're doing final project closeout or settlement stuff with our contractor Newfield. So this is just kind of one outstanding item that we want to get resolved for everybody's benefit.
Okay. Catherine? You're muted. There you go.
We aren't experiencing any water issues that I'm aware of. However, our senior center, we did not pass inspection, if you will. And I really appreciate Lynette coming out. And so we have had a concerted effort over the last week, almost 2 weeks now, of working on some of the issues that are going on in there. And we made a lot of progress. And it's also been part of bringing a few warring factions together. So it's actually been a good endeavor for us to be in the trenches, everybody cleaning and whatever. There are a lot of other changes that need to happen there. So that's been my focus over the last couple of weeks in particular.
Thank you.
That's it for me.
Ashford. Eric, you want to go?
Sure. So we're getting pretty close to having finished building our community / senior center. So there's a lot of excitement involved. If any of you are really want to know more about it, you can go online on the town's website. And we did a walkthrough. I did one with one of the selectmen just showing off the building. So that's going to be a big asset. I also put in a little DOT micro grant to buy a series of e-bikes for the community that will be available on a loaner basis. Trying to encourage people to think about bicycles as active transportation, not just recreation, but a valid means of commuting throughout town. So those initiatives are both going on. Other than that, it's fairly quiet, hoping it stops raining one of these days, and we can all go out and have some fun.
Deb, do you have anything?
No, other than the lakeside view, which is what we call it in our family, it seems to be opening or opened. So you may want to just note that, because it's a restaurant that's been very, very popular, particularly in the summertime. And it also has its own issues, but you know, we're watching it, I'm sure, very carefully. Right.
The Lions Club actually had their meeting there last night.
How did it go?
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
It was okay.
Okay.
Leo was there, and
he's barely cooking, so
being cordial to everyone, and he's doing something up at his other restaurant.
He is. I'm not sure what he's doing
because all the
over by Michael's Penalty Box,
all the stuff's out there. So the stove sitting in a parking lot.
What he's doing wears me out.
So the good news is I don't have a lot to report from Coventry because I don't know what's going on anymore. But a couple things that I do know. They just finished up a major sewer treatment plant study, which looks like the recommended solution is to build a new treatment plant versus tie into, as a cost to tie into Willimantic is so far. It's a unique plant right now that has rapid infiltration and it doesn't deal with cleaning up a lot of the stuff biologically, it's fine, but some of the other chemicals can go into the groundwater and they want better treatment of that. So that's going to be a huge issue for the town over the next kind of 5 years or so to decide how to go ahead with that and the cost of building a new treatment plant. They do have the land available to do that. Secondly, there is a we did get a federal money to extend the Bolton into the Bolton Manchester system on Route 44. Bolton's really fully on that, but federal EPA is also working fairly slow on that. Even though we have the money, we have to fill out a grant application.
Where the mirrors make things look really far away.
Yeah. Catherine, I think you may need to mute. Oh, is Brian? Brian, you need to mute. We're hearing some background noise. So that is also still walking forward. This year in Congress, the town did get $1 million to build a water tower, which will be kind of up here on the hill. Which will actually provide extra water that could be used on the other side of the lake because there'll be enough pressure to go over there, which may help address some water shortages that we have over on the South Street systems. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it will provide fire protection for the village so we can add hydrants so that some of the old mill buildings there could be considered for like conversion to housing where you need sprinklers. And the water supply that the Connecticut Water built has a lot of water available. This would be worked in conjunction with Connecticut Water, but it also could then be come this way and provide replacement for the sprinkler systems at the high school and whatever they want to do at the middle school. We'd actually have some fire protection. So it's a one of the last grants that I worked on, I'm happy to see that happen. And obviously we have some salt and well issues. That's another significant cost project.
I can provide a little bit more.
Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, so the town of Coventry hosted a public meeting to update the community on the cluster of salt contaminated wells in Coventry on Plains Road. At that meeting, the town consultant and the town engineer presented the latest information on the consultant study and also on the plan moving forward. I think the most important thing that came out of that public meeting was the town does have a relatively firm schedule in place in which the identified solution, which is to extend a water main from the Nathan Hale water system, which Connecticut Water operates, to the Plains Road along South Street Extension, is at this point scheduled to start in about a year and be completed in about 2 years. So there is a relatively firm schedule in place to start that process. One other bit of good news the town got was that based on data collected by the state of Connecticut, the neighborhood was identified as a disadvantaged neighborhood. So that increases the grant that comes to the state from 25 to 50%.
Very good news.
The Plains Road.
Yep.
Yeah. John, either you or Rob know anything about the remediation of the dip and strip property?
New work or old work?
Supposedly, they're tearing the building down.
So the property was remediated.
It was remediated.
The company Red Tech, who was the contractor for the Main Street program,
mm-hmm.
Purchased that for $40,000. Mm-hmm. And they are a licensed remediation firm.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding is they remediated everything except some of the surface areas that all they need to do is pave over at this point, but they didn't want to pave over it until some other person designed where the parking lot was going to go. So it's just the parking area that has to be paved. But
you don't want to pave it and then dig it up if you're, you know. So it's all been DEP approved.
Okay, so they can tear down without any damage to any of our streams and whatever.
It's not within the issue is in groundwater, in the ground, not in the building.
There's a stream running right through the property, though.
Yeah, but the construction demolition process right. is not a contaminative process.
Okay.
Well, that's the regulations. Okay. You throw it, you tear it down, you throw it in a dumpster, and it's somebody else's problem.
Okay.
But the codes deal with groundwater contamination. You know, is the ground itself contaminated? That's what they have to deal with right. under state regulations. I mean, the building itself will have all sorts of other, probably has lead paint and other issues that will be items of concern. Yeah. So they will have to deal with all those regulations, but that's a separate issue from, but the last step is basically, and DEP agreed to this, is if it's going to be, something's going to be changed, let's figure out where it is. And after it's done, the pavement will be the final encapsulation to stop water.
All right. Rapidly permeating. Flowing through. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Do other towns have different strips still in their towns?
There's a lot of contamination.
Yeah, but not, different strip is really particularly disgusting.
Well, just because they took solvents and poured it out the back door, yes, that's a problem.
Okay. As long as we think it's under control.
We had discussions with the DEP, and they, you know, they're on board, and they did everything properly.
Okay.
It was getting, Red Tech is a licensed remediation firm, and
that's,
they don't fool around. Because they'll lose their license.
That's good. I don't think Mark got a chance.
Mark Walter.
I'm categorized as Beverly today.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've finally finished the Hunt Road Culvert project, which connects to the Mono Pond Dam. It was an eye-opener. When the culvert was designed, the state told us it would be very long and arduous to get a permit because it touches state property. And after 2 years of trying to get a permit and my STEEP grant about to run out, I had the engineering firm redesign it so that we do not touch the dam. So now we have a brand new culvert and a brand new dam with 2 feet of old cruddy cement in between them. We just cut off the culvert, left 2 feet of it attached to the state dam and built a new culvert. So it's just amazing how the bureaucracy just cannot get out of our own ways. But it works. I don't know. It'll be the state's problem because it's on their property and when the cement eventually fails. But it's just bizarre. I didn't lose the STEEP grant, and the culvert and the dam are safe. We also had a random test from OSHA a couple weeks ago. That took a week out of my life. And they, of course, found quite a few things, but we cooperated fully. My $5,400 in fines, we got down to $2,100 through cooperation. And my recommendation to everybody, since OSHA seems to be out in this area, is to invite them in for a voluntary consultation, which it'll be the same as a full inspection, except there'll be no fines involved. And some of them are very, very nitpicking things they found, like the Clorox that we clean our toilets with. We can't use Clorox unless we have eye washing stations in every building where we use Clorox. So I now wash toilets with Simple Green. So we had to get rid of all bleach products in the entire town, which seems to be excessive, but we're following the rules. Update all our SDA sheets. What's that?
Backflow preventers is another key one they always like to make sure you have.
Well, we we're up to, we did really good. A lot of things that they did find, I totally agreed with, and we resolved them immediately. But that's behind us. I've recommended that the school invite them in. They've never been inspected, and our firehouse hasn't been inspected in a long time. So I recommend it to them as well to invite OSHA in. And then
what were all the things you got dinged on? What are they? What were they?
A lot of them were really nitpicky, like a janitorial closet with a that used to be a bathroom that we now just store sweepers in, had an old vent fan without a cover. So that was a $350 fine. I just put a cover on it the next day, but I still had the fine. Our chains were not all labeled and tested annually that we use in the Public Works Department. So we got dinged there. All the procedures for, I forget what they're called, but the procedures the Public Works uses to track everything we do to be safe had the wrong Public Works director's name on it. That was a big fine. We changed it to the correct Public Works director's name. So I recommend that all these forms, you just put the title of the person, not their name, so that your forms are in compliance. We also got dinged on, they did a spot check on my Public Works guys doing a road job, and we had flagmen on each end of the project, but without the signs in their hands of stop and go, slowing. So we got dinged heavily on that. So we're back to using our signs properly. And they privately interviewed every Public Works employee, looking to see if we were doing any unsafe practices, and we passed that. And today they're supposed to do an entire 8-hour shift with our road sweeping crew with filter monitoring equipment on the sweeper to make sure the road dust was not to an excessive amount. So I don't know if we passed that today. We had a portable drill press that was not bolted down to a bench. We got dinged on that. And our grinders, one of the grinders, the little safety brace that you hold things on, was out an eighth of an inch too far out. We got fined for that. So there's a lot of things. It'll be an eye opener when OSHA finally goes through your town. And I agree, a lot of things that we had were slightly unsafe, and we fixed it. Threw away a lot of some extension cords that weren't perfect, but still got fined. And you'll eventually get to experience it, I'm sure. That's all I have, John. Nothing on the restaurant or health side. Everything else is working fine, and the district's doing a great job. Glenn's holding down the fort. Super.
Great. All right, we can move on to director's reports then.
So first item, just a heads up. Normally in this meeting, we get a memo from finance director to appoint an auditor, but Mansfield's in the process of going out to bid for those services. Due to compressing of our schedule, because our next meeting is until June, unfortunately, we'll have to, once they do select the auditor, this board will have to appoint the auditor after the town selects the new firm. And that has to occur before our next meeting. So this is just a friendly heads up to executive committee members that we're going to have to convene a meeting once the town does select a firm to get them duly appointed for our purposes. I don't know if Amanda, if there's anything you want to add to that. She's still there?
I don't see her.
I think she left. That's okay.
What if we vote to approve the auditor that Mansfield chooses?
We could just do a quick vote once they.
Okay.
We can do a quick online vote.
We can do a quick virtual meeting of the executive committee. It's not going to take.
We won't let you down, I promise.
The reality is, but there's like nobody out there, and the prices have gone up by about 40%.
It's good. Good luck finding someone, Ryan. You might be back to your original auditor.
Yeah, we. Sorry, we made it clear that just because, you know, you go out competitively doesn't mean you end up getting a better price than when you were talking with one firm directly. But council's, you know, in the spirit of competition and open sourcing, competitive procurement, they wanted to do this. So we'll see what happens.
It's there are way less firms and the minute you open the door, they charge you a lot more, by the way. Oh, we can charge more now. All right.
So the next item is Connecticut Association Director of Sales Legislative Session Report. So a couple of things that I want to point here. I've been active on the CADH Advisory Advocacy Committee during this legislative session, supporting and writing testimony for the organization. There is a report of all the pending pieces of legislation, but the one thing I want to focus on, two things I want to focus on is that CADH did submit testimony in an effort to try to get our per capita grant to local health departments increased. Given the current state of the budget in the state of Connecticut, it's unlikely, I think, that we'll get anything. But nonetheless, we did submit testimony in that regard. Now that it's in the hands of the legislative leadership and the governor's office, it's hard to say what's going to come out of that dark room when all is said and done, but we'll have to wait and see. The other piece that I want to bring to your attention, and this is something I've talked about in the past, confidentiality of private well data. The state health department did propose amendments to that piece of legislation that came through last year. You recall that my office was opposed to that piece of legislation, and then subsequently so is CADH. CADH did submit testimony in response to the amendments that the state health department was proposing. They were trying to kind of mitigate some of the concerns we had about that law, but didn't go far enough, really. They should just really delete it from the law. Just by way of background, as it's currently written, private well data reported to the local health department by a certified lab is confidential. We can't share with anybody, even a neighbor. We can only share it with the property owner, nobody else. And that's a problem from our perspective, because anybody who understands anything about hydrogeology understands that if one well is contaminated, okay, that proposes implications and potential problems for all the other wells in proximity. Mm-hmm. And the fact, the way the law is written now, we cannot prompt neighbors with the information so that they can protect themselves. We cannot share the information. We can't even if we investigate it, we can't even report out on our outcome of our investigation. So you may ask, well, how are we dealing with Tallinn? Because we're doing all the sampling in Tallinn and we're getting the reports for all these private wells. Well, we're working around this law by having DEEP provide the information to the town and to the consultant. We're collecting the data, but DEEP is giving it to everybody because the same law doesn't apply to them. It just applies to the local health department. So it's a stupid law.
But the real estate lobbyists want it.
Well, so that's the thing. So I have support from Senator Gordon and Representative Nuccio, and Senator Gordon has been very helpful. He is on the Public Health Committee, and I met with him last week, and he is considering submitting an amendment on the floor because this bill went through Public Health Committee without any changes to it, so it's still in place, and he's very sympathetic and supportive. And so he's connecting with the co-chairs of the Public Health Committee to see if it makes political sense for him to submit such an amendment to the floor. And so he's going to get back to me on that. If he feels like submitting an amendment on the floor won't get anywhere, then the next step is to submit a bill, independent bill, addressing this issue in the next session that he would sponsor. So
it really is a real estate lobby.
Well, so we suspect that, But every time I ask that, every time I ask the state health department about why this law exists, they don't respond. They are silent. And when Senator Gordon asked the commissioner during the committee, you know, what's going on, I don't know that he ever got a response from the commissioner on it. So it seems like the state health department is protecting this provision for some unknown reason, because it doesn't make any public health sense. So my office isn't going to give up. We have the support of CADH on this matter. They're not going to give up. And with Senator Gordon on our side, hopefully we'll get some traction on this matter moving forward. If not this session, then maybe next session. We'll see.
There's a lot of real estate agents in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, well, I suspect the state health department during last year's piece of legislation, they got through provisions which created a statewide database of private well data. They've been working on that for a while. Basically, that piece of legislation mandated that certified labs report all that data to the state health department. I suspect, I can't prove it, that to mollify the real estate lobby, state health department agreed to make all that data confidential.
So why don't you file an FOI?
That's an interesting idea.
File an FOI complaint request for that data and see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah, I know you are.
Because I believe that is public data if the state paid for it and collected it.
Well, the state law says it's confidential. And that it's confidential pursuant to 19A-25, which is the confidentiality statute that governs all public health confidential data.
So let the FOIA Commission decide.
It's interesting. Anyway, so my office has been putting some time into it. We're getting some legislative support, so more to come on that. Because it has implications state, and implications not for our district, but statewide, which is why CADH supports it.
Well, I mean, if you buy a house, you should be able to know if your neighbor has a contaminated well.
That's right. You should, absolutely.
Because you know that you do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're buying a house, you can require that be sampled.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't require the neighbor to.
No. So the other piece that I so more to come on that, and I'll keep people updated with progress on that. We'll see how it goes. The next item is sodium chloride groundwater contamination. So in your packet is a letter we sent out to 150 residents in the health district. Just by way of background, you may recall that the health district was collecting information on private well data. And over the past 6 or 7 years, you know, we have a record of about 150 properties in which we have drinking water test results which show elevated sodium and or chloride. Also, this past legislative session, a law was passed which requires local health departments to create a online mechanism for residents to report to the health department and to the state any damage due to sodium chloride contamination. And so...
But this is public?
Yes. No. No, it's not public. Well, okay. So let me just explain. So in support of, in support of an effort to get information to the state about the damage that's being done to private residents and private property due to sodium chloride, they created this reporting system. It's on our website. And so we directly notified all 150 properties that this reporting form, what its purpose is, and encouraging them to go to our website and to complete it. And so I did share this letter with DEEP and with DPH, so they know we sent it. And it'll be interesting to see if we get people reporting their problems to our website over the next year or so.
What damage does sodium chloride cause?
Well, chloride is very corrosive to plumbing and to fixtures.
How about the people?
Sodium is a problem for those with, who should be on low sodium diets. Dr. Darty.
Blood pressure and fluid retention, blood failure.
Yep. But chloride can do significant damage to plumbing and fixtures. We've got some residents in Tallinn who have had tens of thousands of dollars worth of damage.
So it goes through water tanks and pumps.
Wow.
Yeah, here in Coventry, we've got a couple of properties on Plains Road. Same experience.
What's going on Plains Road?
It's a long story. I'll tell you.
No, don't violate any privacy.
No.
So it's
an unfortunate situation.
So there's that. Also, in terms of Brian spoke to briefly some of the efforts that the health district's been engaged in partnership with the town to support them, but. One of the things that we're going to be doing here in the very near future, and we're going to employ this district wide. Right now, the state health, the Eastern Highlands Health District, reviews and approves design plans for a water treatment wastewater disposal system. So every water softener discharges wastewater to a leaching absorption field in the yard somewhere. The health district has to review plans for those leaching absorption fields and approve them before they can be installed. So the health district through our administrative authority. We already require as part of the information that we collect for the application to review the plan details on the type of treatment system they're proposing. Now we're also going to require them to submit a water test, a recent water test. So that we can see that the water quality supports the type of treatment system that they're proposing. Part of the problem that we've seen in Tallinn and other communities is that many people are using water softeners when they don't have hard water. They're using it to remove things like iron or manganese or just improve the taste. Where they don't really need water softeners, which discharge sodium chloride into the environment. They can get away with calcite or other alternative treatment systems. And so what we're going to do is with the implementation of this modification in our workflow for this plan approval is if we see that they're proposing a water softener for something like iron and manganese when they don't have hard water, we're going to send them a letter and reference educational information and notify them that they may not need a water softener. There are alternatives available, and here's information to explore.
How about treating for sulfur?
Sulfur?
Yeah.
So sulfur is a little bit different. I mean, sulfur is a naturally occurring mineral in groundwater, and under certain conditions, it reacts with some bacteria and creates the rotten egg odor, right? That's not like either iron, manganese, or sodium or chloride. There are things you can do without treatment that may work, like just chlorinating your distribution system and killing all the bacteria off that reacts with the sulfur. And if that doesn't work, then it could be you've got to do, there's some plumbing work you can do with your hot water system, because that's often the source. So treating for sulfur isn't always something you necessarily do. That would be a last resort. There are a number of interim steps.
But there are a lot of water softener companies that are going around selling the systems. Mm-hmm. And some of them are not, at least historically, have not complied with the discharge permits.
They're getting better. Most of them now are coming to us for a plan approval to install things, because and also a number of them have come to understand that, you know, that a water softener isn't always needed, and if a water softener isn't properly maintained and operated, that it poses an additional risk and sodium chloride loading to the environment. So Banner, for example, has already been working with the town of Tallinn on some of this stuff. Part of the solution in one of the Tallinn sites is to potentially upgrade all the treatment systems to on-demand systems versus time systems, but we'll see where that goes. It's preliminary stages right now. The point is this: we're getting information. We're using one of our systems to get information out to people who may not be making informed decisions about what they're doing. And there are other areas too that we're going to be exploring and improving. We're also engaged in upgrading our website. And exploring other ways to reduce the sodium chloride footprint in the broader community. So more to come on that.
Okay, cosmetology.
Cosmetology. You may recall that the board asked this office to provide a second progress report on the administration and management of the new cosmetology permitting program. You do have a cover letter and some data. We did complete our second annual permitting cycle. We inspected 85 establishments. Of those 85, 81 are in full compliance. We've got four in which we've got identified timelines of compliance. We anticipate that those other four will come into full compliance within a reasonable time frame. We think that the program continues to be reasonably well received by business owners and contractors. So at this point in time, we're not seeing any pattern or any information that would indicate that any kind of modification or changes to the program need to be made at this time.
So as we anticipated, it looks like the hand sink issue is...
There's two outstanding hand sink issues. One is a relatively new one, new this year. I think it might be a new business, but one is a year old. And so we continue to work with that person. We are seeing incremental progress. They have a temporary hand sink in place right now. So they're in temporary compliance. We're optimistic that based on recent communications, they're going to get something in there.
So how's the general feedback from the public on these businesses?
I'm not sure the public's generally aware that their businesses are now being inspected. I think for the most part, the customers and public kind of expected us to be doing it all along.
I would have assumed somebody would have been inspecting.
Instead of just we've been doing it, we were inspecting it, but on a complaint basis only. Now that we're fully engaged. And many of the business owners have welcomed it because it's helped them kind of improve the quality of the service and
Do they get a sticker or a placard?
We give them a certificate, a permit. Yeah. Yep.
Rob, you mentioned 85, and pardon me, I just understand. What in these tables you've got? What, ones that have failed?
Yeah, the table is, these represent 21, so there's 21 lines in here. So basically these are, 21 of them did not pass the initial inspection, and so this is the violation.
A lot of them are pretty...
But then, upon re-inspection, they did pass.
I mean, unlabeled spray bottles.
Yeah, it's not,
not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
You've got to get your act together.
I mean, it could be that they was corrected. Whatever violation was observed was corrected at that time of the inspection. So that's what you see here is this is a list of 21 establishments and the violations that we identified and the date they came into compliance.
I think that only having four is an excellent number. I'm really excited about that. I was surprised too.
Yeah. Any other further questions on that? Okay. So just an update on health district staff. And we did post a part-time public health nurse's position. We do have, we're in the process of interviews now. We've got interviews scheduled for five candidates next week. Hopefully we'll have our part-time public health nurse in place sometime next month. So more to come on that. We're pleased actually with the pool of candidates we have. So,
and highlights in the quarterly report?
The one thing I would like to highlight in the quarterly report is on the second page, top bullet, community health wellness program. We did coordinate three harm reduction events, and our subcontractor distributed 40 Narcan kits from those three events. We're currently in communications with the North Central District Health Department. They got some additional funding to address opioid misuse in the community. And so we're anticipating getting more grant money through them. And so we'll continue to provide these harm reduction events throughout the district this coming summer and into the fall. So exactly how much we're going to get, I'm not sure yet, but we're very happy to see that funding is going to continue, and that we'll continue to be able to provide those services. And that's it.
We have an increased risk of EEE. I assume that's a mosquito.
At the end, yeah, Eastern equine encephalitis at the end of every mosquito season, the virus tends to amplify.
We're going back into mosquito season now.
Yeah, but it doesn't tend to be a problem until the end of the mosquito season, the very end, like in September.
Okay.
As they had time to breed all.
Yeah.
We've had so much water. I'm just thinking what is going to really get killed.
Yeah. But this past season wasn't a significant concern, but the season before 2019, just before the pandemic hit, we had, I think, 3 fatalities in the state of Connecticut, or 3 cases.
Really?
Okay. I can't recall, but more than we had anticipated that we typically observe in the state of Connecticut for human cases.
Okay.
And so, kind of next under communications, unless anybody has any questions about any of the communications.
They're interesting.
There seems to be a growing food issue with lectric contamination. It's not just apple.
Well, the applesauce thing. Thank you, Dr. Darden.
Thank you.
The applesauce item. We actually got a communication with the state health department about that, and we saw it. And based on the federal recall and alert, realized that we may have had some local retailers that were still selling it. So we actually sent staff out into the field to those retailers to see if they still had this product on the shelf. As it turned out, they didn't, which was good.
What product are we talking about?
It's it was a squeezed bottle of applesauce for young
kids. Oh, yeah.
Cinnamon applesauce.
Cinnamon flavored.
Yeah, cinnamon flavored applesauce.
I was convinced that little kid of mine was going to turn out to be the answer.
Yeah.
Turned out mom never purchased any of
that.
He had it at school.
But
yeah,
now
maybe
that's
the one you're one of the other kids.
Yeah. But now that's a standard question in the investigation form for any lead case. But anyway, that was interesting. Some other health jurisdictions were not so lucky because this is kind of a statewide initiative by local health departments, and there were other jurisdictions that actually did find this product on some of the shelves in their local jurisdictions.
And bluegrass, too bad.
Anything else for the good of your order? It's not on the agenda that should be. That would probably be an FOI violation. So is there a move to adjourn?
It's almost
seconded.
There's a waiver in there too.
Yeah, and Beverly also did a second. Thanks, Clark.
Best birthday meeting ever, guys.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Who's that?
Ryan,
happy birthday.
All right. I'll declare the meeting adjourned, even though people are pretty quiet.
We voted yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, all.
Okay.
Keep going. Beat 6 o'clock. Yay.
That's, I'm proud of you. Holy.
Yeah, so planes really things finally progressing.
Which is basically
a little more than that. I think the whole project was
$80 million,
right? So it's like at 50%. They're gonna have to bond. They still have to bond.